So I'd like to offer a few thoughts. I hope they're helpful. We are now kind of at the midway point of the retreat, and after a couple of days of not doing the habitual things that we do every day that keep us so busy, and checking our devices and looking on this computer and the various ways that we lose ourselves in that way, and we're getting quiet. The mind maybe is quieting down a little bit. And it's when habitual mind states that have been kind of there under the surface begin to be noticed and seen, because we're paying attention. We're quieting down, we're sitting still, we're walking quietly, and we begin to notice some of those underlying forces that drive us in our lives. And a drivenness is, it's usually unskillful. The kinds of skillful attitudes that arise, such as generosity, love, truthfulness, patience, drive us. They rise up and they're kind of become part of the unfolding of the moment in a more clear and gracious way. It's the drivenness, the energy of drivenness, that we begin to notice. And this is, especially true. It's not necessarily how retreats unfold forever. Those of you who have done many retreats might, no longer experience this in this way. But it's certainly part of what usually happens in the first 5 or 10 years of practice, we begin to become acquainted with those inner drivers that that we weren't really recognizing were in control. And the Buddha called these the hindrances. I always struggle with that word a little bit. I'm not very fond of that word, because it gives the idea that there's something to be avoided, that there's something like, oh, they're bad. But actually, the hindrances are really important, and it's important to begin to understand them and how they push us around. And they're actually opportunities to engage. There are five that are named as hindrances. In the Buddhist teachings, there are what are called the three poisons, or the three fetters which are greed, hatred, and delusion. And the five are kind of outgrowths of those. But they're not exhaustive, so I'll name these five, but there are others as well, other names we can give them, different iterations. So sensual desire, so grasping, greed, wanting, the mind wants, the mind, a thought arises or a sensation arises, and we're pulled out of ourselves we're pulled into, the mind like leans out and reaches out. And then we begin getting caught up in, you know, how can I get it? So it begins to, I don't know, consume us, but it begins to direct our attention toward this this energy of wanting. The second one is ill will, aversion, anger, resentment, so annoyance, judgment, all of these things. We direct toward ourselves, we direct toward the environment, we direct toward other people. You know, maybe you've gotten annoyed at this constant sound of construction. It's just wanting something to not be there, which is there. I mean, and maybe it's not been a problem for you. It's actually, I've worked with that on one long retreat, and I actually, when I hear the sound of construction, it kind of arouses certain very pleasant and positive memories of how I worked with that resistance and then saw through it. So it was a kind of breakthrough moment around construction. So as you remember, construction sounds enlightenment. Another one is sloth and torpor, sleepiness, lethargy. So, dullness of the mind, confusion, being spaced out. Another one is restlessness and remorse. So that energy, like, they're actually two different, but they have kind of the same agitating effect on the body and mind. So restlessness is just a kind of an energetic thing, and it could come from something that's preoccupying us. And it's like, I can't sit still. I just can't sit still. You know, let me out of here. I remember one teacher describing her experience of restlessness as being like, she wants to run out of the hall screaming and pulling her hair. So, very dramatic image. But it can be, not quite so dramatic as that. It can be just, it's really hard to sit still. The mind is jumpy, can't connect with the body, can't connect with the breath, can't settle. Remorse is getting caught up in something that happened in the past and just being agitated about it and feeling like I have to fix this. And then skeptical doubt. So doubt is something that is important. It's not that one should have blind faith and accept everything that is said as, that's the truth with a capital T. Yeah, of course we notice if it doesn't fit with our experience or we, we want to reflect on it more. And maybe we'll just say, no, I don't connect with that teaching. And that's okay. But skeptical doubt is, we just keep like coming back and again and again and again, like, it's kind of like a not trusting, not trusting the Buddha, not trusting the teachings, not trusting Sangha, not trusting the teacher, not trusting our own capacity for enlightenment, or maybe this is not the way for me, maybe there's a different way. And so we can do that on and on and on and keep trying on different ways. And so that can be a hindrance in the path. So there are other words that come up for these afflictive emotions that cause distress. And of course, it's not just on retreat that these come up, but when we're on retreat, it's like we're not escaping from it. We're not, you know, turning on the TV or opening the fridge or calling our friend or, you know, whatever it is that we do to escape our unpleasant feelings. So some others are jealousy, resentment, shame, guilt, addictions. So addictive behavior is a kind of drivenness that comes out of wanting to escape from unpleasant feelings such as these or loneliness. So there are many different kinds of afflictive emotions. And we can feel very lost when we're in them. They can feel quite overwhelming. Just to kind of digress a little bit, David and I went for a walk in the woods, and we kind of got lost. We got a little bit disconnected from the little flags, the blue flags, and went off somewhere. And then as we found our way and came out, and David said to me, there's a Dharma talk in here. So I figured I've got to weave it in.
And, I was planning buffalo meat for dinner.
Good luck. I remember when I spent a lot of time at IMS, like about 20 years ago, like just retreat after retreat, and would walk in the woods there. And there were, I think there are different markers now, but at that time there were blue markers, like a stripe painted on the trees. And I felt, you know, I had this kind of feeling of security, like, oh, this is the path, you know, this is the path. Like, so, and somebody's gone before, found their way, and marked it for me, you know. And I did at times lose the marker, but could find our way back, my way back, like we did. We said, oh, there's a blue flag. And so that feeling of being lost in the afflictive emotions, you know, it's like, you know, we can remember that that there's a path and we can find our way out. So these hindrances are called that because they impede or they're obstacles to our capacity in that moment to be calm and tranquil and to have insight arising. We're caught, we're lost for a moment. In this, when we bring mindfulness to, so when mindfulness arises, as we cultivate mindfulness, and at some moment as we are feeling caught in sense desire or anger or sadness or anxiety, whatever it is, a moment of mindfulness may arise if we've cultivated mindfulness. So we then shift our relationship to that hindrance. So one moment we believe that we are that. Like one moment we believe, I am angry, I am sad, I am wanting. And we're in it. And the next moment mindfulness arises, and so there is the recognition, there is sadness, there is anger, there is desire, and so on. There is restlessness. So at that moment that there's recognition, to the extent that we have developed a capacity for the mind to be steady, open, non-judging, and present, accepting, we are able to relate, to change the way that we relate to that inner experience. So where one moment ago, you know, we were like, I'm angry. and a moment later, with mindfulness, it's like, oh, wow, there's anger. And there's recognition. It's painful. This is really painful. That's insight. In that moment that we recognize that what we're caught in is painful, that's insight. That's insight. Last night I talked about anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, suffering, unreliability. It's a whole spectrum of instability. So trying to hold on to an experience as being permanent, stable. So recognizing, wow, that really hurts to be caught up in this anger. And so to the extent that we are in touch with our own care for ourselves, like people don't usually knowingly choose suffering. We keep stumbling on and on in suffering because we don't know another way. But when we really get it, wow, this hurts, we might want to stop. Just like, wait, let me stop feeding that fire with the story of that's not fair and that's wrong and I'm going to do this and I'm going to let them know. And just give it space. So this is really something that quite wonderful that happens. It becomes sort of ordinary for an experienced meditator, but it's quite miraculous when we stop getting hooked by it and identifying with it. Impermanence, the energy, kind of runs it out. So you know, an image that I've used for many years in understanding this and explaining it is, they probably don't sell these anymore, but they used to sell little wind-up toys, you know, that with a spring and like a little car or a little robot or something, and you'd wind it up, and it would go, you know, you'd let it go, it would go, you know, like bang into the wall, fall over. So like that's being at the effect of the energy. But if you pick it up and kind of hold it and let the spring discharge, you know, and then it stops. And like, that's sort of what happens, that in that moment, or however long, minutes, usually there's a shift, you know, within a reasonable time. Could be an hour, but as if we're really letting go and seeing the suffering, that the holding on to that story, to that, I mean, it really comes from selfing, believing that I am this self and that you have wronged me, or you took this from me, or I need that, or I have to have that, or, you know, many, many stories. Then it does dissipate, like impermanence. We think of impermanence as, you know, often as something we age, you know, we lose things, things break down, and that's true, but also, you know, ignorance and suffering can dissipate, can diminish when we stop feeding the flame and we stop reinforcing it with the stories that we tell ourselves. So one of the things that can happen just to finish that thought before I just so impermanence can be a friend, and the mind gradually does become less reactive and more calm, you know, over time. So it's not that our mind should, that we should be expecting that the mind will become, you know, perfectly clear and without thoughts, without unskillful thoughts, unskillful words and actions. Like practice, I think, is a lifetime. And suffering does diminish with years of practice. But it's not important. It doesn't, I mean, awakening, yes, you know, it's not to diminish the goal of awakening, full awakening, to be an arhant or a Buddha. I mean, that's kind of the orientation that we may have in our lives, you know, to awaken for the benefit of all beings. But it's not kind of a goal that that we have to achieve, like, in our lifetime, because really understanding how the cause of dukkha, the arising of dukkha, how we can let go in a moment to being caught, let go of being caught in it, like, that's pretty good. That's like life can be a lot better for ourselves, and we can bring more skill and blessing and kindness into our lives in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that happens as we become more mindful, and we begin to recognize these hindrances and afflictive emotions, is rather than getting caught in them, we might recognize them and then feel self-judgment or guilt because we think, oh, I shouldn't have these. You know, I'm practicing mindfulness. And so why are these still arising? So that can be a pitfall. And it's really important to remember that with mindfulness is that implicit in mindfulness is that warmth, that kindness, that non-judgment, that openness. This is how it is right now. So self-doubt is arising. Self-doubt is often the most common expression of doubt that we experience. There it is. Imposter syndrome or, you know, annoyance, judgment, irritation. And just bringing that steadiness that we cultivate and it does take cultivation. That steadiness, that patience, that presence, that openness to just be with what is arising and recognize that it arises and passes away. That quote that I read last night from the Buddha, how valuable it is. One moment of seeing arising and passing away. You know, so much more valuable than, many, many good deeds or, virtuous actions. I mean, not to belittle those. They're really wonderful and they do good for ourselves and others. This insight into the arising and passing away is so key in our liberation. So we avoid. So in this mindfulness, in this opening to what is arising in this moment, we avoid falling into the extreme of either expressing the unskillful energy or repressing. So that judgment that comes up, and that was like when I first began to meditate, and I was sitting in meditation and I would see, you know, jealousy arising or irritation or wanting. And it was like I had this door in my mind that just slammed. Go back to the breath. So going back to the breath can build a steadiness of attention, a capacity to stabilize the mind. And it can also lead to bypassing, really understanding what these energies are that arise and that drive us in our lives into doing things that cause suffering to ourselves and others. So, and also another thing to say about that, judging the hindrance, is that actually what we're doing, if we do judge the hindrance, we're reinforcing aversion. These are pitfalls on the spiritual path. Maybe we've experienced them, or we know people who, you know, are very spiritual, and you don't feel the love. You feel like, oh, I got to be perfect around this person. Really, when we, using other language, when we open to, when we recognize, accept, become aware of, and release the attachment to, the identification with these energies that drive us, we are really making friends with our shadow, getting to know the shadow. And that is something that is a gift to the world. If we can see these energies, not condemn them, have compassion for ourselves, and allow ourselves to release them and to find different ways of being that are more skillful, this helps us to really connect with the suffering of the world in a compassionate way. When we accept, you know, these forces, these energies that are so painful and afflictive and unskillful and present and alive within ourselves, it's not all of who we are. By no means, you wouldn't be here if that's all of who we are, but they're there. And so the question is, how are we relating to them? And once we can recognize that it's not me, it's not mine, any more than earth, water, fire, air, the body or me or mine, that they arise from causes and conditions. They arise from the causes of our families, our societies, our education, our experiences, our life experiences. So have we been traumatized? Have we experienced bigotry, racism, anti-Semitism? Have we experienced poverty and feeling of want, deprivation? All of these, you know, shape the mind. And so it's a service. It's a service to the world to begin to unpack this stuff and recognize, you know, consumerism. Like want, need, more, new, different. The next iPhone, the next whatever. And meanwhile, you know, the earth is being devastated. Can we be content? You know, these coming to understand these energies in our lives is part of being the solution.
Can I ask a question?
Okay.
It's about insight. You know, when you talk, and it's a lot like this in the Buddhist literature, it's kind of the insight is something, in one moment you realize something, and then something's changed in your life. And for me, it's, if I see that on that way, I never had really insight, but I realize I have some insight, but the change will come slowly after, and then maybe after 1 year I will say, oh, I realized something there. And but I'm curious to know if it's like only me, or with more practice and insight will change and will be like something like, sometimes I feel it's a kind of myth that insight it's change, and but maybe not, maybe after years of you can tell me if you have
So you're saying that insight has arisen at times into unskillful behavior?
Yeah.
And then you've recognized it, you've worked with it, with meditation, with mindfulness, and it arises again.
Yeah, but for me, I realize things, like in retreat, but things don't change a lot in my life. It's going slowly, slowly, and I realize that things have changed. But like in the myth of Buddha, it's like you realize something after many, many, many years, and in one moment, his vision was completely different. And we have some famous author who will say the same thing, like, and...
Right.
I don't, yeah.
So where's the Satori?
Yeah.
Everybody's path is different.
Yeah.
Everybody's path is different. And so, you know, one of the teachings about the Buddha is... the stories of his previous lifetimes where he practiced all of these virtues, you know, the parami, generosity and kindness and generating energy for, you know, like good works and truthfulness, all of these different virtuous deeds and ethics and so on. And so... So all of this is part of the path. And there is a path. Like there is a path that the Buddha outlines, the Eightfold Path, you know, with the, you know, the factors, the ethical factors and the wisdom factors and the meditation factors. And, you know, there's my path, there's your path. Because we all have our different kinds of karma, you know, to use a word that just points to a mystery, really. All the different things that have shaped us, all of our ancestors, all of our experiences, you know, like we all have, the path unfolds differently for each one of us. So it's just really important for us to be present, walking this path, which really unfolds step by step. Like, it's not like as we walk the path, you know, we can see, oh, there, you know, there it is. I see it winding up the mountain. You know, it's like, it's this step, and this step, and this step. This is what I need to do next. You know, like at a certain point in my practice, I realized I was very inspired because I was doing a certain training. And I realized that I hadn't really seriously practiced ethics. Like, it's not that I was doing a lot of bad things, but to really deepen in the practice of ethics, you know, it was a real deepening, you know, and I, you know, it, I came to understand that, you know, at a certain point in my practice. And so, you know, maybe for somebody else, it's practicing, you know, self-compassion or, you know, compassion for others. So it's, you know, so the path is very profound and unfolding. And what I'm describing here in terms of insight is one part of the path. It's the meditation part. So mindfulness and concentration are one part of the, they're, together they're one part of the Eightfold Path. So, so it's, and I remember hearing once that the Dalai Lama said something about evaluating your practice. He said, yeah, you should evaluate your practice every 5 or 10 years. So, yeah, because you don't really see in the short term how you change. But, yeah, I look back and, you know, and I could, and sometimes I look back at things I said and did. It's like, oh, no, I would never say or do those kinds of things now. Just, I mean, I just couldn't, because I understand, you know, I'm less confused, I'm less. But that, you know, that's a perspective that we get over the course of walking the path. So, but you know, it's, I guess one thing, a last thing I can say about this path is that, you know, it's good in the beginning, it's good in the middle, and it's good at the end. And that we, it brings joy. It brings joy. And also to have friends on the path. That was one of the things I said to David is, if I get lost in the woods, you're a good friend to have.
Ditto.
So thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.